Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, turning your upside-down world right side up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Well, welcome to the Best People I Know for this very special Monday show, and thank you, BTR, for making Dr. Joseph Berger, Why Do I Do That, a staff pick of the day. Believe me, you are going to be so grateful that you came by here today. This show with Dr. Joseph is going to change you and talk about good change. Get ready. It's about to happen. I want to remind everybody to, you know, follow us on BTR for our shows. You can go to my website, greenskyandbluegrass.com, to get a monthly update of all the great guests that we have. And you can also download this show, which you'll want to do, to your mobile device for free on iTunes at The Best People We Know. So Dr. Joseph Berger, if you don't already know him, and you may be familiar with him if you're on, you know, reading Psychology Today, but even if you're reading Glamour magazine, he's been quoted in there. He's very well known and very well respected. He has practiced psychotherapy for more than 30 years, and he's the founder of a really popular blog and website, afterpsychotherapy.com. And in this platform, he discusses personal growth issues from a psychodynamic perspective. Well, today we're really privileged and honored to have him discuss his newest book that just released, Why Do I Do That? I love that title. I've read this book. You guys are just going to be so, so grateful and psyched that you tuned in today for this. It's a self-help book for people who don't usually buy self-help books. And I can't imagine anybody not ever asking themselves, so why do I do that? Psychological defense mechanisms are an inevitable and necessary part of the human experience, but when they become too deeply entrenched, they may damage personal relationships, restrict or distort our emotional lives, and prevent us from behaving in ways that promote lasting self-esteem. Why Do I Do That? Promotes self-help for readers who want to improve their relationships, manage their emotional lives, and develop authentic self-esteem that will last. Now, the beauty of this book is its easy-to-understand explanations. It's divided into three parts, and we're going to go through these today with everybody. But the first part teaches you about the unconscious mind and the role of psychological defenses. Now, the middle part really is the largest, it's a big bulk of the book, that explores the primary defense mechanisms, and it has exercises to help you identify your own defenses at work. It's enlightening. The final part offers guidance of how to disarm your defenses and cope more effectively with the unconscious feelings behind them. This is a message of healing and hope for all of us. Thank you, Dr. Joseph Berger, for writing this book. Everybody, you got to go to afterpsychotherapy.com. Get this book. It's an investment and a gift to yourself. Welcome back to the Best People We Know. We're so excited to have you here with us, Dr. Joseph.
Hi, Deb. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, this book is amazing. I'm telling you, this to me, as I was reading it, I'm like, wow, this is going to be a new classic. This is going to be mandatory reading for every single person who wants to better themselves, or it should be in, you know, mandatory reading in all schools for training. Unbelievable. This book is amazing. I've never read anything like it in my life. And I've read it once, but I have to read it so many other times. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Now, I am excited because listeners are really going to discover something very unique today about themselves with your help. Now, I think that, you know, there's different ways we can start, but maybe you could describe to listeners, you know, if we start out, what a defense mechanism is, and why do we rely on them, and then we can kind of go through the book, and we will take questions at 347-637-1318, or you could type your question in the chat, or if you're on Twitter, I'm at GreenSkyDeb, and you can ask there, and I'll ask Dr. Joseph for you. But defense mechanisms, what are they, and why do we rely on them?
Well, the definition I rely on throughout the book is they're lies we tell ourselves to avoid pain. You know, there are other kind of more technical definitions, but this is the one I like the most because it's something everybody can understand and relate to. I mean, we can all understand wanting to avoid pain, and I think we all understand the ways that we can deceive ourselves so that we don't have to face it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one thing that I love about the book and I love about the way that you communicate with all of us is you make it very simple. You kind of take the technical stuff out of it and get down to the basics. Look, why do I do that? We don't want to feel pain, okay? We're trying to avoid pain. Guess what? We all do it. Yes, we have an unconscious level that we do it on. And then you help us find out what we may be doing in those defenses to ward off the pain. Speak to that to the listeners, because it's really amazing what I discovered about myself as I was reading through this book.
Well, you know, the thing about defense mechanisms is that everybody has them. We all use them. We couldn't get through life without them. And I think it's important to recognize that, you know, you don't have to face every painful thing, every painful feeling in your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, sometimes you just need to rely on your defenses to get through. You know, for instance, you know, when somebody dies, we typically rely on different defense mechanisms to help us with our grief. That's like normal and, you know, expectable. We need to do that. But sometimes when our defenses are getting in the way of us dealing with some kind of pain, then, you know, it really works to our disadvantage because we need to face that pain. You know, to me, a good example is a lot of people have trouble dealing with anger. And anger is a very painful feeling to have, and we often repress the awareness of it. And, you know, that's okay to some extent, but often, you know, anger is a really important feeling to recognize. You know, anger motivates us to make important changes in our lives, to, you know, to fight injustice, to get out of abusive relationships. If you're not aware of your anger, then you're likely to stay in situations that are really bad for you.
And you know, I think that you know, what attracts listeners, I think, to want to learn about this with you today is we can all say we've experienced pain. I can't imagine anybody not asking themselves the question, you know, why am I doing this? I really don't want to do this, but I keep repeating these patterns. And what you're saying is that there are unconscious ways that, you know, there's good things that we have in defense mechanisms, but it's those things that are not serving us that are bringing us more pain instead of less pain. That's what you're trying to help us identify and then take it to the next step, you know, to be able to deal with those defense mechanisms so that we can be, I guess, what you would call in the very end of the book, you know, it's like, okay, so what is the definition of being happy and healthy and mentally healthy and all that? I mean, I think sometimes society gives us this idea that, you know, somebody else has the answer or nobody else deals with that except for you. I mean, you really go over every single thing. Any question that anybody, any of you out there could possibly have, believe me, this book covers it. Speak to this, the way the book is outlined, to help lead us gently through the experience of awareness, healing, and action.
Well, In the first section, I start off by talking about the kinds of universal human experiences that people usually defend against. Like, so what is it that will typically give rise to a defense mechanism? I divide it into three different areas. One of them is coping with the reality of the fact that we all need and depend on other people. Lots of people have trouble needy and dependent, and they have a set of defenses that, you know, ward off that experience. The second is coping with strong feelings. You know, being an emotional animal who gets angry or feels sad. Big emotions are difficult to manage, and a lot of us develop defense mechanisms to keep them out of awareness when they're too frightening or too big.
Mm-hmm.
And the third and final category is self-esteem, really. We all want to feel good about ourselves. We all want to feel that we belong and that we're accepted by other people, that, you know, we contribute in meaningful ways. And when we don't, you know, when we instead feel shame, you know, then we defend against that in particular ways. So then as I go through the middle section of the book, where I'm chapter by chapter looking at different defense mechanisms, I help the reader look for the ways that defense mechanism might show up in relation to need and dependency, strong feeling, self-esteem. I talk about it in giving cultural examples, in movies, in music, in books, and then also how you might see it in your personal life, in other people that you know, and also in your own behavior.
Mm. And, you know, I just really want to emphasize that point a lot, because your 30 years of experience with your patients, and obviously you're not giving out, you know, real names and things, but you are giving real situations, so that each issue that you're speaking about, you go through it so that at least when I was reading it, you know, you're giving me the example as maybe a client, the before, the after, the during, and then adding in, I mean, in one section, adding in the Avatar movie, you know? I mean, you bring it so we can really understand it, and it's approachable. And then you give us exercises, and then you give us things to do. But, you know, your answer is only as good as the question you ask. And one of the things that I loved about the book, and what I think people here need to really challenge themselves with, is maybe you're not getting the right answer because you haven't had anybody help you ask the right question. This book that you have written is loaded with questions. I've never seen questions like this before. I mean, it's just unbelievable what asking a different question will catalyze. It's unbelievable.
Well, one of the reasons why I think that people might not have seen the kind of questions that I ask, or, you know, the kind of ideas I discuss, is because the mental health profession, and in particular the self-help field, has really been dominated by cognitive behavioral theories, which are really valuable and have a lot to offer to people. But they don't include the idea that there are unconscious feelings and that we use defense mechanisms to ward off those feelings and keep them out of awareness. So it's a different approach for a self-help book to focus on the unconscious mind.
Mm. Yeah, and it really is a self-help book for people who don't like self-help books, or maybe people who do love self-help books. I mean, I think that there's nothing more exciting. Forget the reality TV. Go journey on discovering yourself, you know, unwrap yourself, discover what that's about, and, you know, you'll be kept busy 24/7 to the day you die and leave planet Earth. But, you know, one of the things that is so touching to me is just how you I guess you relate to the person. You take them through the experience, but you take them through in a non-judgmental way. For example, how many of us listening right now have probably had something in our childhood that, you know, messed us up? I mean, everybody's got something, right? But some people more than another. But your example of, okay, if we don't get these basic needs for a basic solid blueprint when we're children, you know, those neurons, those pathways, those channels aren't dug out, or maybe they're dug out with too many ruts in them, and then we're kind of left with that travel pattern. But that doesn't mean that we have to be hopeless, because what your book is about, and you bring in a lot of science with the neuroplasticity and all of these things that gives people so much hope, like, okay, this is what you got, but that doesn't mean that this is where you have to stay. And doing these things, going through these exercises, asking yourself these questions, we're going to build new ways around that so you can be, you know, happy and healthy and well-adjusted. It's just phenomenal, the amount of research that you have in this book.
Well, and I guess what I would just add to that is that I'm a very hopeful person. I'm hopeful for change for all people. I don't hope for ideal solutions and perfect answers at the end of the day. I mean, I really view growth and change as a lifelong struggle. You know, well, that makes it sound too negative, but it's a lifelong process. I mean, for me as well, one of the things I say towards the end of the book is it's still a routine experience for me to catch myself lying to myself in some way because there's something I don't want to face, and bringing myself around to look at it and, you know, kind of finding a new way to deal with the pain that's better and helps me grow. But, you know, I don't think I'll ever be done.
And that's another thing that I love about you, and you've been on the show before and Top Rated in the past, and it's just a privilege to have you back to share your shine with us. But I think that's one of the things that I love about you and I loved about this book, and I know that listeners will too. You actually share, you know, how you got into this profession when you were in college. Hey, you needed therapy. You were kind of depressed and bummed out. You can relate. You have compassion. You've been there. But your experience of 30 years, you know, with such a great variety and depth of issues, I mean, there isn't one thing that you haven't touched on. And the beauty of that and the hope, to me anyway, was, guess what? You know, even you as the author of the book and its accomplishment, we're all a work in progress and will be to the day that we take our last breath. And I think the expectations that you validate throughout the book are almost liberating in themselves. You know, it's like, wow, you know, maybe my perception of what, you know, that black and white thinking, maybe I'm seeing, you know, my perception of healing, maybe I'm seeing that in the book too. Like, maybe that's one of the distorted thinking things. Don't believe everything you think or feel.
There, one of the visitors to my site once left a comment, and she was talking about the book, and she said, you know, most self-help books are like, here are the 7 basic steps, and if you follow these, you can end up being ideal like me. And I think that one of the things I try and break down on my website and in the book is this role of me as the, you know, the finished product authority and the reader as the person who needs to do the work, and to try and bridge that gap and say, you know, we're all in this together. You know, we all do the same things. We're all, you know, struggling with the same issues, and it goes on forever. You don't finish.
Yeah, and I think that is where we all help each other. And, you know, I'm always saying the Eleanor Roosevelt quote, you know, you can't live long enough to make all the mistakes yourself. You have to learn from others. Now, most of us are not going to be able to be a PhD, you know, LA, all the credentials that you have, 30 years of working with clients. But the beauty of this book is we can experience this journey and learn. And that, to me, I mean, that's priceless. That's almost like giving, you know, 50-something years of life in 250 pages. That, to me, is a priceless advantage that you can't put a price tag on. What would you say to somebody who's feeling like, you know, I know that there's this one thing that I'm dealing with, but I've tried everything, you know, nothing's worked. What do you say to that person?
Well, I would, my assumption would be that there's some unconscious motivation that the person doesn't know about. There's something outside of awareness that's driving the behavior. And until he or she, you know, figures out what that is, then the behavior is just going to remain in place, because that behavior, as you know, distressing as it might seem on the one hand and how much they want to change it, that it's probably serving some kind of self-protective function.
So the idea that, you know, that unconscious mind, it's almost like a sabotaging in a way. So the things that we really want, that peace, that joy, that happiness, you know, people don't want to get up in the morning and say, I'm going to experience pain today. This is something that you're saying, look, if we can bring those unconscious, you know, sabotaging behaviors or whatever you want to call them, your defense mechanisms, into visible view, then you have something that you can deal with that you can make choices about. And I think the book, to me, you know, I can't imagine anybody reading it and not feeling like they had more choices, more control over their life. And I think that that, to me, was a real message of hope, that there are more choices than we think are available.
Well, that is the most important message at the, you know, in the final third of the book. And, it, you know, there's a chapter that's called the Role of Choice. And, you know, not having pain, that's not an option, right? Life mm-hmm. is full of pain. We have it sometimes. We have to learn to deal with it. But you can choose to be aware of it and how you respond to it. That's what the book is designed to help you do, is to make you aware of the maybe the maladaptive ways that you're coping with pain, so that you can choose a better way to cope with it. And that I do think is very hopeful.
And, you know, the questions, how did you come up with all of, I guess this is just your work, because the questions are, well, let's put it this way. I just want people to know, when you're reading the book, Dr. Joseph will actually be in the book. He'll ask the question and give you different answers of what it looked like. Like, you might be saying to yourself, oh, so-and-so is just a way of being needy, or, you know, this, oh, so-and-so gets hysterical about everything. Or, I mean, you just give every single example. Nothing is no pebble is unturned. It's unbelievable. And, you know, I really want people to get an understanding that you give each person, if they don't know where they are, where they fit, most of us aren't, you go through the beginning of the book, you say, okay, look, answer this question. How did you answer this? You probably relate to this category 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more. And then you take that information and you build on it in the next area. Okay, if you felt this way about category 1, pay attention to this. If you felt this way in category 3, you know, we're going to cover that more in chapter 11 or whatever. I mean, it's just not a typical book. I mean, it's more like taking a course, if you ask me.
Well, thanks. I mean, I do think that it's a bit of work to go through this book if you're going to really engage with it, because some of them aren't just questions. Some are things, are exercises, things you have to do to step outside of your comfort zone and find out what that painful thing is that you're avoiding. So it's not easy. It's not just about learning something. It's about really taking you through the process of trying to confront your defense mechanisms and find out what's behind them.
Yeah, and the exercises are really great. I'll just read a couple. I'll just pick so people can get an idea when they get the book what they'll be in for. As with all exercises in this book, record your responses in your journal, and you could do so in a narrative form instead, but make brief notes in the summary. And one of the questions is, when you think about some of the people you know, do you believe there are things you can observe and identify about them that they don't see? Why do you think they don't recognize this aspect of themselves? In what way would it be painful for them to admit the truth? I mean, it's not super technical, but you're definitely dealing with technical stuff. And then the now what sections. Now what? I mean, that's where I think people normally, you know, get stuck. It's like, okay, now what? Now that I know this information, now that I've answered the question, now what do I do? And you really do connect the dots with those now what sections. Speak to listeners about that and how it's going to help them understand, why do I do that?
Well, you know, it's not, as I said, it's not meant to be a purely cognitive exercise in understanding. It's meant to be part of a process in which you come to know yourself better, aspects of yourself that are outside of your awareness, and then how do you make use of that knowledge to make better choices in your life, choices that will lead to more fulfilling experiences for you and help you address the underlying pain. So I'm always doing my best to point the way, to say, well, this is what you need to look for in the future. This is how it will show up in your behavior, and these are ways in which you might navigate the terrain differently.
Mm-hmm. Give listeners some examples, because, you know, I think one of the things about the book that to me was very unique and what made it very powerful is you have 30 years of examples. I mean, most people aren't going to be able to tap into that resource. And you give fabulous client examples all through the book, so that if there's any doubt, if you're understanding what Dr. Burgo's saying, don't worry about it. He will make sure, with compassion and gentle, tender, loving care, that you understand what he's trying to say and how that will help you be the best version of yourself. But do you have specific examples that you'd like to share with listeners?
Well, I think one of my favorite examples in the book has to do with defenses against shame. It's a big topic on my website, and there's a whole chapter on defenses against shame. But the anecdote I really love is talking about my client, Stan, and he had a kind of a lifelong struggle with shame, and one of the ways, the primary ways he coped with shame is by blaming, particularly in his marriage. I think this is something a lot of listeners will identify with, the whole use of blame to, you know, offload shame into your partner in a relationship or in a marriage. It's very, very common. And, you know, we had covered that terrain pretty heavily in our work together. And one day he was noticing he was at home doing chores, and he was just like, you know, kind of enraged in his thoughts, though, kind of just ranting in his thoughts at his wife because his wife was complaining about a lot of different things. And he had a tendency to kind of get into a you know, an accusatory, prosecuting state of mind with her. And then he recognized it, right? He'd come to realize that that was a defense mechanism, and he used that knowledge. He thought, oh, there I am doing what I always do, and he was able to stop himself. And it really brought him into contact with some feelings of shame that had to do with his marriage, some things that had gone on that he was responsible for, and it helped him to soften up, to be able to deal with that shame, and also to feel much more compassionate towards his wife and why she was complaining, what she was upset about, really, which had to do with his behavior and things that he was responsible for. And that enabled him then to talk to her about it, and they came together in a way that was just, you know, it was intimate, and it produced closeness and growth as opposed to shaming and separation and blame, right? So I love that example.
Yeah, that was so many great stories, but I love that story too. And the idea that, you know, the compassion that you give in these stories, and they're all real life. I mean, reality shows cannot be as good as real life. I mean, this is the best. And the idea that when he came and he got well and he became aware, when Stan became aware, and then he almost like brought his wife along to become aware that maybe she was feeling, well, at this age we shouldn't be, you know, trying to make that much money and working this hard, and I had this expectation of my life. But it's amazing to me how when one person gets well, how everybody else gets well also.
Exactly.
Which is really, I think, fantastic, but the idea of not being judgmental. Now, myself, I really think, to me, that what resonated for me, because I think, you know, that shame issue, that it's not something that I did that's wrong, it's like there's something wrong with me.
Right.
I that is, the way you attack that is just amazing to me. Speak a little bit more about that, because you really deal with that in a way that most people have never discussed. And I don't even think people listening probably know. Again, it's like this epiphany. Wow, that explains me perfectly. Or I didn't understand that about myself. Or, well, that explains it. Well, that's why I do that, because this is what's been going on.
Well, I do talk about shame in a slightly different way than people are used to hearing. And to say it simply, it's like when things go wrong early on in your childhood, and I'm talking the first couple of years of life, you know, when, you know, your mother is deeply depressed, or there's some kind of a big emotional trauma, or you have narcissistic parents, for whatever reason things go really wrong, it leaves you with this sense that you didn't develop the way you were supposed to. You didn't develop optimally to fulfill your potential. that feeling that something went wrong, that's what I call shame. It's what I call basic shame.
Mm-hmm.
It's a particular kind of shame different from, say, what John Bradshaw talks about with toxic shame or the kinds of social shame that Brené Brown talks about. It's just this kind of intrinsic feeling that things didn't go right. And, you know, I think that's at the heart of a lot of major difficulties, particularly narcissism, the primary defense against that kind of shame. But you know, it's helping people to come to terms with the ways in which they didn't develop normally, the ways that their childhood left an imprint on them that they may have to cope with in certain ways their whole life, in certain respects, like a physical abnormality, a birth defect maybe. It doesn't mean, you know, you can't do great things. I mean, Helen Keller was blind, and look what she did. Franklin Roosevelt had polio, and look what he did. But you always have to take it into account in some way.
You know, and I love this. I love your examples. It's always, you always turn everything into being hopeful. But like in the examples, so what? So all of us listening, I'm sure everybody has something that happened in their childhood. And then you give that example. Well, maybe a kid didn't get enough vitamin D and they had rickets. Okay, yeah, you've got that. But that doesn't mean that you can't do great things. I love that example with Helen Keller. And I think that's what the book is about, is creating these new ways to really, you know, succeed and be well-adjusted and happy and enjoy your life, you know, with all these things.
Well, exactly. But, it, you know, it's a point of view that not everybody is enthusiastic about. I mean, to me, to say, yes, I have these limitations I have to take into account, but I can do, that doesn't mean I can't do a lot of great things. That's a hopeful message. A lot of people get angry when I say that, and they say, no, I want to believe that I can heal everything, and you know, I'll be, you know, pristine at the end. But, you know, that's not my message.
No, and you know what? I'm sticking with your story, okay? You know, that's the story we're sticking to. I like that because it's an impossible expectation for people to think, okay, you should be perfect. The idea that we're all in this together, that everybody has something, but that we can all learn and help one another to being our best, and I think that, to me, you know, is much more realistic than anything else. And the idea that, you know, to not be afraid to discover that those things that you're afraid of facing, doing that will actually give you what you want, which is that freedom. That it may be a sense of humor, and you mentioned that along in there, but, I mean, back to the Greeks, Socrates, the unexamined life is not worth living, you know?
Right.
I mean, if you don't know yourself, how can you expect to have a good relationship with anybody else if you can't get along with yourself, type of thing?
I couldn't agree more.
So, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. All I want to do is be happy.
Right. You know, as I say in the book, that's something I said to my own therapist when I started therapy, and it's something I've heard from many clients over the years. And I don't think that happiness as a sort of permanent state is something attainable. I think happiness is a feeling that we have some of the time, and sometimes we're unhappy, and sometimes we're angry, and sometimes we're, you know, in love with somebody, and sometimes we're excited, and, you know, there's a whole range of human emotion that is inevitable, just part of the human condition. And learning to bear all of it, to tolerate it and accept it, is what makes life rich and meaningful. It's what connects us to other people. And that to expect to lead a happy life is unrealistic and it's doomed to failure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always encouraging people in the book and in my practice to try and accept the whole range of human experience, you know, the whole range of emotion. That includes anger, hatred, love, jealousy, gratitude, joy, resentment. I mean, it's all part of the spectrum.
Yeah, and I think that that part of the spectrum that you describe almost makes even the bad have the potential seeds for greatness and goodness, because everything can be used in a positive way if one knows how to, as you say, you know, dig out those new channels. Tell the you're going to describe it much better because you're the author of the book, but I love the way that you talk about, you know, the pits in the roads and what being aware and knowing how to deal with these defense mechanisms will be able to do to kind of smooth out. It's not like, you know, you're going to change the road that was there, but you change the way you travel through it. You know, you have a beautiful way of describing that. Share that with listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it in neurological terms. When we've spent a lifetime with our defense mechanisms, right? We developed them early on, and we've been using them for years and years and years. And therefore, those neural pathways are, you know, they're well-grooved. They're the path of least resistance. I think about them as ruts in a well-traveled road.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you know that you have a particular defense mechanism, it doesn't go away, right? Because that's still the you know the line of first resort. I can't remember the expression, but it's always going to be the thing that will come naturally to you, because the wheel traveling down the road is going to fall right back into that rut. But by knowing that it's there, by seeing that it's your tendency, you can then choose to try to do something different. Like my client Stan saw himself falling into the same old blaming rut, and then he made a big effort to quiet his mind, calm himself down, clear some space, and to think about what it meant, and then he chose to do something different. And in that way, you know, when we do that over and over and over again, we're putting down new ruts, you know, we're building new neural pathways, we're developing better habits. The old ones will still be there, you know, in times of high stress, where we might, you know, we'll likely fall back on our old friends, the defense mechanisms, but hopefully we'll, you know, be able to see ourselves in action and choose to do something better, and then in less stressful times we'll have developed more, you know, more effective habits for coping with pain.
Yeah, and it really is an entirely new way of thinking, because probably most people are in the category of saying, okay, why do I do that? But, you know, what your journey in this book does, and with all of the examples and the way that you describe and the analogies and bringing in the movies and really making the reader understand, I think it really gives an idea of the choice that we have is really, I guess what you would say, it takes the unbearable truth and gives it a little bit of sugar, you know, because without that, I think it would be too tough for most people. They would probably say, oh my gosh, that's just too much work. You know, maybe I don't like the behaviors and the patterns and the habits that I have that I want to get rid of, but that's going to be too much work to try to change them, you know, and that's not it at all, because it is an unfolding. Speak to some of the comments that you've had, and I know you've had, you know, a lot of people on your website commenting, afterpsychotherapy.com, and also on Amazon and places where the book is available. You know, what are some of the comments that you've had from people who have finished reading the book to that particular, oh my gosh, that's just going to be too much work?
Well, you know, I fortunately have not heard that comment much. Mostly what I've been hearing is that it's so unusual to hear these kinds of ideas discussed in a self-help book and how grateful they are. I mean, mm-hmm. and you've seen on my website, that's pretty much a regular comment, is people are so relieved in a way, you know, to hear these ideas discussed. You'd think that talking about pain and the difficulty of change would be really burdensome and would be off-putting. I don't find that at all. I find people are relieved and grateful that I talk about it, because it feels true to them.
Mm.
It feels authentic and real rather than an idealized solution. You know, it's...
Yeah, and you really give that vision of when you're at that place, when you're in quote-unquote, you know, good mental health, when you're feeling happy, you know, even though there's no getting there, but what it will look like from the beginning to the end, understanding why do I do that. I like the way that you described it, and it's just like a couple of sentences. You tolerate dependency reasonably well with an overall sense of getting what you need more often than not. You feel deeply without fear of being overwhelmed, confident that your emotions give meaning to your life and relationships. And you can trust your sense of who you are. You're not 100% satisfied with yourself, though you are certain you're a person of value who hasn't stopped growing. I love that.
Me too. It feels so real to me. This chapter is my favorite chapter in the whole book, you know, and walking through each of the defense mechanisms and showing what they look like later on. You know, what does mental health really look like? Well, it's not perfect, right? You know, I'm really pleased with that because it feels so real to me, and it really describes my own life, you know, the way my defense mechanisms continue coming up, how I struggle with them. I mean, I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's like, you know, the high highs, the low lows. It's like, you know, you can drink too much water and drown yourself, you know, and those extremes, that's not necessarily, you know, realistic. And unfortunately, don't you think that TV, society, the media, you know, they set us up with those unrealistic expectations. And I think that, you know, what you share from the heart that is so authentic is, look, this is what's real, not the other stuff. This is what's real. And you know, to me, I think everybody, needs to get a reality check from the perspective that you shared, and especially in those last three sentences I read, because that's the essence of the whole thing.
Well, I think, you know, what you're saying is so true, and you know, we are constantly bombarded with images of ideal lives and people who seem to have it all and are famous and beautiful, and I don't know, it's persecutory to me to be constantly presented with these images when real life isn't like that. You know, that's not what a real life is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many, many people struggle with this issue.
Yeah. And, you know, this whole idea that we're not enough, you know, that it's not enough because the material, more stuff. And I just want listeners to understand that you really do get into a lot of other practices, not just, you know, like the mindfulness and being quiet and really discovering yourself and enjoying what you're finding out about yourself and the uniqueness of who you are and bringing, you know, your best available self to the world, because, you know, no one's staying, right, Dr. Joseph? This idea that you even talk about that in the book, that, oh, well, everybody else is going to die, but not me. I'm not going to talk about it. So, you know, it's
right.
Just not going to happen to me.
Yeah, that would be denial. That would be an example of denial.
That would be denial. Okay, you heard it here. Perfect example of denial.
Yeah. One of the things you were mentioning about, you know, getting more in touch with yourself, one of the things that I talk a lot about is distraction. You know, especially in this modern world, there are so many available sources of distraction that it's easy to have almost nothing to do with yourself. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can be distracted by, you know, music, TV, you know, your smartphone, your iPod, texting, so that you spend almost no time in quiet contact with yourself. And one of the messages of the book is that, you know, in order to, you know, to learn more about your defenses, you kind of have to clear some space, some quiet, in order to listen in on what you're avoiding.
Mm. Well, you know, I can't believe that we're out of time, and I'm just, all we can do is whet the appetites for our listeners to understand the possibilities, but to really experience these transformational tools and tips and resources that you share, how would people get a copy of the book and connect with you?
Well, as you said, you can reach me on my website, afterpsychotherapy.com. And there's a hyperlink to the Amazon product page for the book there right at the top, so you could get it that way, or you can just search my name and the title of the book, Why Do I Do That, on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. On Barnes & Noble, it's only available in the digital version. It's print and digital on Amazon. And my email address is afterpsy, afterpsy, @gmail.com. But, you know, I blog pretty regularly, and I interact with my readers on a daily basis. So, you know, I welcome anyone who wants to participate.
Well, I tell you, your work is such a blessing, and I know that especially this show is going to reach thousands of people and help them, you know, open their mind to the new possibilities and become their best self. So thank you for being such a blessing and being with us and sharing your shine with us and doing the great work that you are. It's just, you're just amazing, and you're so different from so many other psychologists and self-help books out there, that I really think that that difference is what is so desirable in your message, and it's just so refreshing. So thank you, thank you, thank you for writing this book. Love it so much. It's a great gift. Everybody, give yourself a gift for the new year. New year, new you. Why do I do that? And get it on Amazon, worth every single penny. And I'm just absolutely needing to read it myself again and again, because there's so much in there. It's just like, it's like a big gift, and there's lots of, you know, you keep digging and digging and digging because it's just more and more and more.
Well, thank you for having me, Deb.
All right, everybody, go and connect with Dr. Joseph Burgo, afterpsychotherapy.com. Why do I do that? On Amazon, all the links. In the famous words of Oscar Wilde, remember to be yourself, because everybody else is already taken. Thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, just go out there, share this show with a friend. 500,000 listeners is because you're sharing the show. If you know somebody, maybe it's a friend, a family member, somebody who's struggling, you know, you can get this show, you can listen with them, you can download it on iTunes, you can get the book, you can work together. There's no excuse to not step into your greatness today. The world needs you. You're only one. You're the only one that will ever be on planet Earth exactly as you are. So go out there and step into your greatness to be your best. Get Why Do I Do That with Dr. Joseph Burgo. Thank you. Go out. Be a blessing today. Make it great.
Thank you for listening to the Best People We Know radio show with your host, Deb Scott. For more on Deb and her guests, plus her award-winning guidebook to transformation, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up, go to Deb's website, greenskyandbluegrass.com. You can also connect with Deb for coaching or speaking, and sign up for Deb's free Mind Vitamin newsletter while you're there. So now, you're one step closer today to your greatness. We look forward to being with you next time on the Best People We Know radio show.